Order. There are these things called facts.
Order.
Are there any questions without notice?
Just another week now until we get some recordings of the new Speaker of the House and the ability to take some Bronwyn Bishop grabs and use them for ill purposes. I'm looking forward to that. Of course, it's question time, the quiz for news junkies across the nation. You can play along via Twitter using the handle at RNDrive, or mine for your personal defamation needs is at Jules Morrow. Or you can text in answers, and all our guests do like answers to come in via the text messages. The number for that is 0418 226 576. Joining us in the House this evening for question time, we're joined by Peter Lewis, Director of Essential Media Communications. G'day, Peter. Thanks coming in. Excellent. One day you'll be in the real parliament, Peter, I know, but this question time is good practice for you.
Oh, look, as long as I learn to act with a little bit of decorum, I guess. That's my main aim.
It's actually a good point. We've never actually had anyone ejected from this question time, but tonight could be the night. We live in hope. It surely won't be Scott Wales, though, from News Radio. Well-behaved at Scott News Radio,
well
Scott.
Straight down the line. Just the facts, man.
That's it. Excellent. And a place where you might not initially associate with facts is FBI Radio, the community radio station. All the cool kids. No, I'm just saying it's all about cool music at FBI Radio.
That's true.
But if you tune in on a Saturday morning, you will hear, and you can hear it on the internet as well, Backchat. Great name. I think the ABC is going to sue you over it, though.
You guys have had 20 years to do something
disuse,
with that name.
Yeah, fair enough, too. It's Backchat is the politics show on FBI Radio, and we're joined by the co-host, A.H. Cayley. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Jules.
It is a great pleasure. Of course, the Question Time quiz is renowned for being genuinely pointless. It doesn't matter who wins or loses, and no points will be awarded, but let's get started.
Order! Round one.
Order!
Yes, and our opening track there is Rabble Rousers, and we thought we'd start the quiz argy-bargy this week by focusing on some argy-bargy. The first question is for you, Scott Wales, and it relates to a soundbite from this week. Have a listen to this.
When they impeded my passage, that was all it meant was that I was running late for a meeting in Parliament House.
Just in case you thought it might have meant anything else. All right, who was that speaking, Scott Wales? And the predicament that he found himself in is actually not an uncommon one these days. Who else had troubles getting into the same building recently?
That was Joe Hockey.
It was our treasurer, Joe Hockey, who had his passage impeded.
By some students.
Yes, revolting students in Victoria who didn't want him to get into the Victorian Parliament House. And that seems to be a very hard place to get into, not just electorally, but just to get, you know, from the footpath to the front doors these days. Can you remember who else has had a problem there?
Some recalcitrant Victorian MP who they really need for the balance of power, so they won't sack him. I cannot remember his name.
And I think in so many ways that is appropriate. I can't give points, but I would give you one. Peter, do you know who it is?
I think I used to work for his namesake. Is it Jeff Shaw?
It is a Jeff
it
Shaw.
Is Jeff, very
yes,
good.
Yes, not the, sadly, now great. Deceased a former Attorney General of New South Wales, but the not late and not so great independent MP from Victoria, Jeff Shaw, who, of course, was filmed walking up the steps of the Victorian Parliament. Yeah. Interesting media story as well, because the first round of coverage of it was all about MP, you know, wax protester, and he copped a bit of flack for that for a couple of days. But then after that, the footage was released of what had gone on prior to that point, and you may think many things about Jeff Shaw, but I think when that video was put in context, you could understand where he was coming from.
And he had been wronged that time.
That's right.
It was no John Prescott, though, was it?
No, exactly. I should have made that question the great biff of politicians. John Prescott, of course, had a mean right hook at a protester, if I recall correctly.
That's right. He was doing a street walk, and someone was giving him a bit of lip, and he just turned around and just went with it. And you've never seen anything like it, but I think his ratings went up significantly as a result.
They did indeed. Okay, A.H. Cayley, this one's for you. The G20 is going to be held in Brisbane shortly. And, of course, those sorts of events are always accompanied by protests. And there's nothing that a Queensland government likes more than passing some repressive legislation. So as well as all the bikies stuff, this week Queensland's passed a law setting out a list of prohibited items that no one is allowed to carry in security areas during the G20 summit. Don't worry. I'm not going to ask you to name them out. Off the bat, so to speak, I'm going to give you four. You're going to tell me which one isn't prohibited. under Queensland's latest win for civil or loss for civil libertarians. Your choices are any banner more than 100 centimetres high and 200 centimetres wide, dangerous reptiles, steel-capped boots, kites, and in a numeracy fail, there are actually five options. Horns is the other one. So you've got banners more than 100 by 200, dangerous reptiles, steel-capped boots, kites, or horns. Which ones of those are not specifically excluded under the Queensland legislation?
Well, I'm wondering if you're trying to catch me out with the sizing of the banner, because I know there are size restrictions on the banner and I can't remember them. I know that eggs was one that you're not allowed to have.
Which, not even free range, you know.
Which I would struggle with. I became recently unemployed and so every meal is eggs. I'm going to say the dangerous...
Dangerous reptiles.
Dangerous reptiles.
But what would you use a dangerous reptile for in a protest?
Oh, it looks really good on a shoulder. Just ask... what's her name? Naomi Robson.
Naomi Robson, yeah, that's right. I don't know who was more...
I'm pretty topical, you know.
Yeah, I'm not sure who was more dangerous or reptilian in that scenario. But, no, look, it isn't dangerous reptiles. They are actually... they're out. You can't do it. Horns, they're also... That's listed in the legislation. Which one isn't?
Oh, it would have to be you're allowed steel-cap boots because if you're a worker...
Yeah, steel-cap boots aren't specifically excluded.
Everyone I know with steel-cap boots is an anarchist, so I just assumed...
Yes.
No go.
It's a good point you make.
Or they work for Meriton, one of the two, or both.
Same thing, mate, same thing.
Kites, though. Kites. You can't fly a kite during the G20 in Brisbane.
Not during the day. It's creepy.
And you could fly it aggressively too, couldn't you? You could cause some real mischief, couldn't you, in the no-fly zone?
I love the kind of...
You know about the no-fly zone.
I know a few things about restricted zones and no-fly zones as well.
You never tried a kite, though.
You could attach an effigy to it as well.
You could, yes, yeah. We tried an inflatable blimp over the Vatican, which it turned out was illegal. And a big shout out to Amanda Vanstone and Tim Fisher, who were Australia's representatives on the ground in Italy at the time. Very fine officers they were. No steel cap boots in Queensland. And I can only imagine what happens imagine if a bikie turned up to the G20 with a kite, a dangerous reptile, and horns. I mean, they'd probably do life.
I'd love to see a bikie with a kite. That would be a really...
It happens all the time.
Really,
at least you could keep his shoes on, though. Yeah.
It's question time on Friday Drive. Peter Lewis, you're in the hot seat now. We're now going back to the year 2000 when Melbourne hosted the World Economic Forum meeting. And there were, again, lots of protests. What was the name that was given to the anti-WEF protest movement? And why didn't the name really stand the test of time?
The anti-WEF.
Yeah, I'll give you a clue. It involved... three letters or numbers. That's a real clue.
Oh, yeah.
Anyone remember? AH, you probably weren't born back then.
Wait, no, I was thinking of...
I was out of the country in opposition to the Olympics. I missed 2000. That was one of my dumb moves.
Yeah. Scott, do you recall?
I don't.
Okay, all right. Well, I'll give you a clue. It related to the date of the meeting, which was held in September...
S11.
S11, yes. September 11, 2000 protest.
Yeah, that's right.
September 11 kind of got hijacked, or worse.
The next year. Good use of words,
yes,
Jules.
Yes, there it is. That's the sort of quality punning you can expect on the Question Time quiz on Friday Drive. Julian Morrow with you, and it's 7:15.
Order!
Round two.
Order!
There you have it. Simon Aveling, Ali Benton and Anne-Marie de Bettencourt on the RN Drive Orchestra out the back there. Beautiful introduction to round two. Pretty scary stuff. And, well, you'll understand why in just a second. AH, Kaylee, we're going to start with you. And you should be worried.
Cool.
You should be very worried.
Start with me after the psycho music.
Because we're talking. We're talking about literature. This is Radio National. We have to keep it educated and erudite. So who is the provider of this literary excursion from the last week's news?
As well as a former Aussie Rules halfback flanker, I'm also an English literature major. And because of that, I know the Hulk is a 1960s cartoon reworking of Robert Louis Stevenson's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
I give you some thinking music, but it's too scary to play. That was from the news this week. It was not a university literature lecturer. I'll give you that clue. Any thoughts on who that might have been?
Well, I would have said Glenn Lazarus, but he said Aussie rules.
Yes, yeah.
No, and I make it a point as a proud Illawarra Steelers supporter to never, ever engage with Aussie rules at all. And hello to the rest of Australia.
Oh, they all tune in to Friday Drive, don't you worry.
Don't they all? I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea who that is.
Can anyone else help AH out?
Peter? It's my good mate George Wright, who's the ALP National Secretary, doing the... And he gave a beautiful speech. The other part of it, it was laden with Aussie rules because I don't think he wanted to talk about politics too much.
But, the gothic nightmare. Yeah, that's right. Of course, yeah. Yep.
But what he had this great analogy. He felt like Nathan Buckley, who, when he won the Norm Smith Medal in about 2001 but lost the comp, just ripped the medal off and just didn't like losing. And George is sort of a bit like that.
He did. So, he did say he didn't like losing. Let's have a listen to how George Wright applied his literary knowledge of Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde and the Hulk.
Tony Abbott likes to portray himself as the Iron Man, but when most voters look at him, what they saw was a mild-mannered Bruce Banner trying to suppress his inner Hulk.
Kapow-ish, kind of.
Ouch.
All right, this round...
Hardly suppressed.
as well as devoted to gothic horror, it's also devoted to those post-mortems that happen all the time at the National Press Club from campaign directors. Scott Wales, this one's for you. Who is this reflecting on their campaign?
One of the only things I agree with from Brian Loughnane's address here is that you learn more from defeat than you do from victory.
Okay, so it's not Brian Loughnane.
It's not Brian Loughnane, but it must be a Liberal Party.
Well, no, Loughnane's Liberal, so it's the other side. Yeah. And it relates to a defeat in recent time. Do you want to hear it again?
Yeah, actually, that'd be good if we could.
Okay.
One of the only things I agree with from Brian Loughnane's address here is that you learn more from defeat than you do from victory.
And you know what? Just because it's a bit of fun, let's have another excerpt from that speech later on.
It would be remiss of me not to spend some time dealing with the biggest post-election myth emanating from the Liberal Party, and that's the alleged popularity of Peter Costello.
Oh, it's just a festival of zingers, isn't it, down at the National Press Club when the campaign managers get into full gear. Okay, so we're in the Loughnane era, which is still going. Any guesses on what year it might have been? It was within the last 10 years.
Maybe.
Anyone else got an idea?
Was it Sam Dastyari?
No. Timmy Gartrell.
It is Tim Gartrell, yes.
Loughnane's seen about 5 ALP secretaries off now.
Jeff
Walsh, Gartrell... Bitter, George.
Do you know how they kind of commemorate them on the walls at Liberal Party HQ? Is it like a Game of Thrones style portrait on a stake or something? I like to think that might be true. Okay, Peter Lewis, you're showing yourself quite the scholar of...
like the hacked them.
Yeah.
That's all I got, though.
All right, okay, well, let's see if you can decode this one. Now, I have deleted the crucial year from this next grab, which campaign head is addressing the National Press Club here?
Or as political commentator Alan Ramsey, I thought, aptly put it some time ago, most of Labor's caucus are, and I quote, raucous, hustling young clones in suits.
I think it was Andrew Robiney's days when he was a hustling young clone in a suit.
Yes, yeah, and I'll give you 7 years on that because he was the federal director of the Liberal Party from 1990 to 1997. Andrew Robb, of course, now the Minister for Trade and Investment, and you are 100% correct. That is his address after the 1996 election, and it was probably the best line, I thought, in the whole address was the first line where he noted that the last time he'd spoken at the National Press Club, it was on April Fool's Day in 1993. So he didn't have a great National Press Club day there, but he said that he thought, you know, addressing the press club in the context of victory was far better. So there you have it, the post-mortems of the National Press Club. And just because you're showing off on Labor hacks there, Peter Lewis, who would have given the Labor address in 1996 to reflect on the defeat of Labor that year?
Gary Gray, if Paul Keating had bothered speaking to him for the entire campaign.
Well, I've got it down as Bob Hogg.
No. 96, Gary Gray. Well, it was famous. Yeah. Like, you read Don Watson's book. Poor old Gary Gray couldn't get through to the PM.
Well, maybe Gary, like this maybe that's why. I'm not sure that Gary gave the address that year, and that might be for that reason. But anyway, we will look into that one further. Look, don't worry, there's plenty more Labor hacks to come in the next three rounds, so you'll be okay, Peter. Question time on Friday Drive. Our guests in the house this week, Peter Lewis from EMC Media, Scott Wales from News Radio, and A.H. Cayley from FBI Radio Politics Show. Back chat, of course, if you want to, just live through the highlights of the quiz. It's also podcast, of course. You can get it through iTunes or via the Radio National website.
Order! Round three.
Order!
Yes, in true commercial radio style, this round is dedicated to the secret sound. It's a little bit of a tribute to Kyle and Jackie O. We're talking about recordings, secret sound bites this week. Scott Wales, who is this?
Eventually, it will come out why things went wrong and who was responsible. And that will be another very, very difficult moment in this company's history.
Now, I will say this is not a recording made this week, but the speaker of those words is currently facing some fairly serious issues.
Oh, Rebecca Brooks.
Rebecca Brooks is correct. And, of course, former chief executive of News International, who's currently on trial with, as it turns out, it seems, at least, her former lover, Andy Coulson. We won't dwell on that thought. Let's move right on. That was in a beautiful irony because there's been an outbreak of phone hacking, of people talking about phone hacking. That was Rebecca Brooks talking to her staff after the News of the World scandal broke. Of course, Rupert Murdoch was then secretly recorded when he spoke at the staff meeting. And I just hope somebody sneaks a microphone or a recording device into the jury room. Don't you think? When they're deliberating, that would be a great one for the ages.
That'd be Guy Rundle's job.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure. Do we know if Guy could operate a recorder, though, secretly? I'm not sure. Anyway, we'll dwell on that. Okay, A.H., Cayley, you've got, a phone-tapping bonanza now. Of course, the 2011-2012 Leveson Inquiry investigated the phone hacking scandal, and there were all sorts of people who came out to explain why they thought or knew that their phones had been hacked. We're going to have three grabs now, and you've got to tell us which three people are talking about their little experiences with the editorial practices of News International in the UK. Here's the first one.
I had been told by my management that he had specifically asked for me to sing PAYEZU. And when I raised to my management the point that PAYEZU was actually a requiem, which is a funeral song, and does he really want a funeral song at his wedding? And he said he didn't care whether it was a funeral song. He liked that song and he wanted me to sing it, which I did.
Anyone know who that one is?
That would be Charlotte Church. Charlotte
Church, indeed. Don't you love the idea of somebody singing a Requiem song at Rupert Murdoch's birthday? Let's say happy birthday to Rupert now, shall we? Yes. Yeah, of course. We could keep that going for the rest of the quiz, you know? It fits the vibe. All right, let's keep that. Let's keep PAYEZU going. A.H. Cayley, who do you think this is?
And so she would leave charming, jokey messages saying, please call the studio executive back. And she has a voice that could only be described as plummy. I cannot for the life of me think of any conceivable source for this story in the Mail on Sunday except those voice messages on my mobile telephone.
She had a plummy voice.
Yes.
who do you think that is?
Julian, I'll thank you not to speak ill of my future husband. That would be Hugh Grant, the most foppish man in the world.
Oh, come on, your future ex-husband, surely.
That's true. I'll get him for all his words.
Okay, all right. Well, that's, you're two for two so far. Let's keep the hacking festivities going. And this one, not quite as fun, but see if you know who this is.
It's very difficult to say how angry I felt that my 5-year-old daughter's school was no longer a place of complete security from journalists.
The actress.
Not the actress.
No.
Nor the bishop.
Because at first I was going to J.K. Rowling.
J.K. Rowling, yes. A.H. Cayley gets J.K. Rowling. There we go.
What are the odds?
Absolutely spot on. And, you know, I think we found a new theme song for the Question Time quiz, haven't we? It is 26 minutes past 7 on RN Drive. Julian Morrow with you. And, look, it's a good thing that we've just got rid of Charlotte because things are going to get just a little bit more coarse now. And that's not only because I'm asking you the question, Peter, but it does go back into Australia's not quite so flourishing history of phone hacking. Have a listen to this and tell me who are the participants in this most memorable of conversations. Oh, and there is a program warning here because we do have a few little swearies.
Okay. A long beep.
In this one. Yeah, it's quite a long beep. Have a listen to this. Tell us who it was.
He said, I know where your sympathies lie. I said, I couldn't give a fuck. I have no sympathies anymore. You're all a pack of shit. He said, tomorrow I'm going berserk. Well, he went off his brain. And at the end of it, I said, Howard, you're a you never got my support. You never will have. And I'm not going to rush you or the party tomorrow. But I feel a lot better of having told you you're a oh, the poor little fella doesn't know whether he's after or not. Oh, shit. I just thought I should let you know. Well, tomorrow you are humble.
Is it Neil Armstrong?
Yeah,
is it?
Yeah. No great giant leaps for mankind in that little exchange. I've got to say, I'm just now hugely regretting the fact that we weren't playing PAYAZU underneath that. I think it would have been the perfect soundtrack. Peter Lewis, I'm sure you know who that was.
Yeah, it was Jeff Kennett and Andrew Peacock.
It was. In the days before mobile, well, before, I think that was a car phone.
It would have been a brick or a car.
Yeah,
that's
right.
It was something big.
And the journos used to listen into the
car with him.
Yeah.
Sorry. Apologies.
No, that was good. I like your rugby league reference.
Thank you.
Obviously, the character reference was their future prime minister, who wasn't looking very prime ministerial at the time. I think it was in that era where Peacock and Howard were in
That kind of did it for him in the end, didn't it? That conversation was pretty much the end of he didn't rise twice.
That's right. That's true. And many people did cite that sort of conversation. Ian Courtlang, who ended up, who was on Peacock's staff, said that, and he was involved, I think, in the coup against him, said that, that phone call was quite significant. That call is available in full on one of the great national archives. I don't know if you can buy it, but of course, AustralianPolitics.com, a kind of citizen-initiated archive of Australian politics, has the full transcript.
The Black Label edition.
Yeah, that's right. And the full un-Radio National bleeped version. It contains great phrases like Andrew Peacock saying to Jeff Kennett, hold your flow, Jeff, as a way of trying to shut him up. There's so many good things. I thoroughly encourage you to go there and have a listen.
Part of the defence, though, Jules, was that they used to go over to each other's house in the evening while they were ironing each other's shirts. It was kind of, the whole thing got kind
Kennett
of weird.
Kennett and Peacock.
They were tight.
Well, there's an image of domestic bliss that I'd never conjured up until this very moment and don't quite believe to this day, I've got to say. It's Question Time on Friday Drive. Julian Morrow with you, our guest in the house this week, Peter Lewis from EMC Media, Scott Wales from News Radio, and A.H. Cayley from FBI Radio. Let's crack on and do, you're going to love this, guys, some maths.
Order! Round 4.
Order!
Yes, it's the numbers round on Question Time. We're going to give you three references to stories from the news of recent times, all of which relate to a number. You can have your calculator out. You can keep track of it, but you've got to try and get to the magic number that will secure you, well, absolutely nothing because of how pointless the Question Time quiz is. Scott Wales, we will start from you. Can you please take the number of Senate votes that the Australian Electoral Commission seems to have lost in Western Australia, subtract from that the number of votes Clive Palmer won the seat of Fairfax by, and then add to that, and I know you'll all get this, the number of years that Kyle and Jackie O have been doing the Today FM breakfast show.
1,334.
So close.
We'll be adding 10?
We were taking...
Oh, sorry, okay, were we adding the last
team,
one?
Let's step it through. Okay, so we've got number of votes that were lost in West Australia. What did you have for that?
1,375.
Is correct. Ping. Number of votes that Clive Palmer won Fairfax by on the recap?
53.
So you've got to subtract that from 1,375. AH is on the calculator as we speak. And then you have to add the number of years, and I think this might be the source of confusion. Yeah. This is a little bit tricky. That Kyle and Jackie have been doing the breakfast show.
Is too many a number?
Yes. You know what? I'm going to give you... you whatever number you came up with when you factored that in.
Painful illusion of infinity.
Yes. Yeah. Look, I won't have a bad... Well, I will have a bad word said about Kyle and Jackie O, but I just do want to note that there was a short period earlier this year when I was, on a Thursday morning, the federal politics correspondent for Breakfast with the Stars to promote the Hamster Decides on ABC Radio. That was on a Thursday morning, and then I was doing Radio National Drive on the Friday, which I think is the maximum theoretical cultural difference.
And you have to get yourself Australian radio. It is.
Yeah, that's right. It was hard to keep
track.
Did
you do a weather update on Classic FM?
Yeah, that's right.
Just to get you on the Big Sports Breakfast.
No, and we had the Friday drive, Black Thunders out across the city, you know, and all sorts of radio stunts. Kyle and Jackie have been doing breakfast for 8 years.
8 years.
13 years together, but it was, as you all know, I think it was the top 30 countdown, was it, before that?
Yeah.
So that, I think, AH can back me up here. I think that gets us to 13:30, does it?
Yes, it does.
It does. There we go.
That's correct.
All right. Okay. Well, since you're so good and you can put your calculator away now, AH, firstly, can you take the age that Lou Reed was when he passed away earlier this week? Can you add to that the age of the Liberal MP who gave Clive Palmer some free advice about being an MP this week? And then subtract from that the number of times that Rupert Murdoch mentioned phone hacking in his Lowy lecture this week.
Lou Reed was 71.
He was.
And
he
may he rest in peace. I'm going to assume, given that we've said Liberal MP and age, that we're talking about Wyatt Roy.
We are talking about Wyatt Roy. And you know, he's been on the scene for so long now.
Well, haven't we all?
Mm.
So he was 20 when he was elected, was he?
In 2007.
Okay, I'm that bad at maths. So that was 6 years ago. So he's 26 now?
He's not 26. He seems so much more mature and old, but he's a little bit low. Okay, we're going to go New Price is Right on this. Lower.
24.
The Radio National crowd is like, lower, lower, higher. It's lower than 24.
23.
Well done. Uh-huh. Okay.
Uh-huh, he's so young. I turned 24 a couple of weeks ago. So. He has no right to be discussing politics.
And has he hosted Backchat on FBI Radio? No.
He tried once, but we were like, mate, you haven't had radio training. Piss off. And
then you have to add to that the number of times that Rupert Murdoch mentioned phone hacking in his Lowy lecture this
week. Which, if we're talking explicitly, would be a big fat zero.
That would be a big fat zero. So you're going Lou Reed plus Wyatt Roy. That's that's an unusual calculation, but it should get you to roughly...
Peter Lewis helped me. I dropped out of maths when I was in year 10, so 94.
94.
Thank you, Peter Lewis.
Pleasure.
Peter Lewis, we're going to step it up now because we're going to bring some zeros into this, and we're going to make it very hard for you. Can you please take the amount of money that Joe Hockey has injected into the Reserve Bank of Australia's reserve fund? Can you add to that how many years into this century the centenary of Gallipoli will be?
Yeah.
And then subtract from that the number that would be worn, assuming that he starts in the Wallabies, although he doesn't always, by the new vice-captain of the Australian Wallabies. What number would he ordinarily wear, given his usual position, if he steps out as vice-captain?
Okay.
Let's go back to the easy one, the amount of money that...
Is it 9 billion?
It is 9 billion. Okay, yeah. So we're on 9 billion. We've got to add to that how many years into the century...
No, you'd obviously say 2014, but I think it was 2015, but really...
Yeah, no, you're right, It's 2015. So we've got 9
billion
and 15.
And then ends up being 9 billion and 25 because for some reason...
Oh, you got to subtract it, though.
And then minus Quade Cooper.
Minus Quade Cooper.
You tend to minus Quade Cooper whenever possible.
Yes.
Wow.
And so that gets you to 9 billion.
Nine billion and five.
And five. Well done.
Yeah.
Good.
It's a good thing Quade Cooper didn't have to do that.
Although I must say,
he did play well last week.
He did play well. Yeah. And I was actually impressed by the press conference he gave. He was,
monosyllabic?
Polysyllabic.
Yeah, cool.
And on moments, informative. And let's just see how that all turns out, shall we? Quade Cooper as the new force of cohesion on the Australian Wallabies. It could be a tough few years. It's question time on Friday Drive. It is 25 minutes to 8, and we've got one round to go.
Order!
Round 5.
Order!
It's the anthem round, the one to bring it home on question time. The way this works, it doesn't involve maths. It simply involves knowing the national anthems of every country on earth. And this, we can open this up to everyone, okay? Because what we're going to do is we're going to play you a national anthem. It relates to a story in the news from this week or recently. Not necessarily the biggest one, so they are pretty hard. But it's just our way of familiarizing ourselves with some of just the musical classics that national sovereignty has provided across the globe. Scott Wales, we will start with you. Let's everyone be upstanding. You are already. And salute this little ditty. We'll keep it playing because it's just such a... It's great for the moon.
It's racist.
Less uplifting than a Requiem by Andrew Lloyd Webber, I think. Well, you're in the part of the world, but it's not Russia, although they do sound very similar. In that region, anyone else want to have just a stab at another country that's around there?
Kazakhstan.
Belarus.
No, yeah. I'll give you a clue. It's a lateral one. Ray Charles is the clue. Famous track by Ray Charles.
Georgia.
Yes, he's correct. Yes, that is the national anthem, and they would have done better to go with a Ray Charles track,
much
to be
better.
Fair. That's the national anthem of former Soviet country, Georgia. It's called Tavisu Pleba, which, as you all know, means freedom. It was adopted in 2004 along with the national flag and new coat of arms. If I recall correctly, the first president of an independent Georgia was Edvard Shevardnadze, who was the foreign minister for Mikhail Gorbachev. Mm-hmm. And the reason we're playing that is because there has been a transition of power in Georgia, presidential elections held last Sunday. The new president is from the ruling parties, I love this, Georgian Dream Coalition.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Now, that's nice, Brandy. If you change Labour to Australian Dream, yeah. I reckon you get 5 points immediately.
They've been trying for a while, haven't they?
And I'm surprised Palmer didn't call his party the Dream.
Or Factional Nightmare, they should call it. Yes, the Georgian Dream Coalition's Georgi Magvelashvili, I think, is the 44-year-old former university rector and a big supporter, as it happens. And it was a good thing that you mentioned Clive Palmer, because the Prime Minister of Georgia is also a billionaire. I think he's Georgia's richest man, Bidzina Ivanishvili, and he wants to seek NATO and EU membership and improve ties with Russia, which may well cut in separate directions, that one. But, that is the Georgian national anthem. A.H. Cayley, see if you can pick this little one.
Come on, language. Oh, this is a new one from Royal Headache.
Yeah, it's been remixed by Flume for Radio National.
Oh, no. Gross. I'm from FBI. I love Flume. I love a bit of Flume.
No, it's actually a bit more austere than this country's reputation, I would say. It's called the Marcha Real.
Brazil.
The Royal March. Royal March. One of only three national anthems in the world to have no official lyrics, so small mercies, I suppose you could say.
So thanks for giving me that one.
Yeah, we've got...
linguistics degree just went down the drain.
We've got a couple of clues, and maybe we'll go with the second one, if we can, just to try and help you out. This is a little bit of a hint for the country of origin of the Marcha Real.
Somebody passed by with a car and screamed, "I love you!" And 10 seconds later, somebody else passed by and said, "Whore!" And then I go, okay, I think I understand the dynamic that comes with being famous.
One of this country's most famous personages appearing there on The Ellen Show. Any help? Was that any help?
Oh,
who do we think that was?
The Ellen Show.
Strong accent.
Are we in South America?
The one
America?
Who was in 30 Rock?
I don't think she's in 30 Rock.
No. It's Modern Family, Columbia.
Yeah, is it?
No. This is a European country. Oh. The Royal March. And okay, let's try another one. Can we play the other clue?
For me, it wasn't the problem. The guy was really nice. He said, "I love you," and he kissed me.
And that was a sporting personality who was kissed by a guy, and he dealt with it quite well, as many people from this very, very suave nation in Europe do.
So they're all about the gays, is what you're saying. Okay, what's the gayest country I can think of?
Well, look,
here?
I tell you what, you're not going to be travelling anytime soon. No, it's Spain.
Spain. Oh. Peter Lewis, got it.
Yes, yeah, well done. Oh, did you have that under your
breath? I just sort of whispered it
Come on, Peter.
And I couldn't hear it because I had headphones
that's
on.
That's right, be confident, Peter.
I know.
Yeah. And that was...
Spain! Spain!
We had Penelope Cruz on the Ellen Show first. And then back in September of 2009, a fan invaded the court at the US Open and tried to kiss Rafa Nadal.
Rafa.
As you do.
And that was Rafa saying that was okay. Yeah.
Sure.
How cool are the Spaniards, really? That's fine. Invade the court and I'll just keep on going. I can't remember whether he won that year, though. Does anyone remember that, 2009? Anyway.
If it was on clay, yes, and otherwise probably not.
Yeah, that's a fair call. Okay, Peter Lewis, you are on fire, anthem-wise, at the moment. See if you can pick which country this is. It's a hard one, this
like
one.
Because, they all sound
it does. And this one doesn't really evoke what you would expect of the nation involved. But what I suppose there's a little bit of continuity here with the Royal March that we had. Because this nation is very well known for its belief in the monarchy, but it's a little bit closer to home.
Would we have a national who's now part of the royal family there? It's not the Danes.
No. It's in Southeast Asia, actually.
Okay.
Tough one. They love
the monarchy in Southeast Asia. That'd be Thailand?
It is Thailand. Oh. Yes, that is the national anthem of Thailand, adopted on the 10th of December, 1939. It's known as Fling Chat, which...
That's a new web service.
It
does sound like it's really gross.
Yeah, that's right. All the kids are into it. It's an incredible app.
It's worth listening to.
We've got to be careful because of those Lèse Majesté or Majest laws at the moment. It translates inventively as national anthem.
Nice.
So it's very, very well known.
Hey, we're the country that has the Harbour Bridge and the Opera House, so
true.
We can't really go down.
Exactly.
I won't hear a word against them, mate.
And it's
not very likely.
And, of course, even though it refers to the generic idea of a national anthem, it's also what they use for their national anthem as well. And that brings us to the end of the quiz.
Aww.
So well done, everyone. If I had, stamps or points to give you, I'd give them to you all because it's been excellent all around. Peter Lewis from EMC Media, thanks very much for joining us. AH Kayleigh, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Jules.
And do have Wyatt Roy on one day.
Give
him a bit of youth culture.
All right.
And Scott Wells, I'm sure you've probably had Wyatt on News
Radio.
Oh,
you would love having Wyatt on. He always requests ELO at the end of interviews. We have to tell him that we're not a music station.
And thereby ensuring that he won't be appearing on FBI Community Radio anytime soon. That's it for the quiz. It is 17 minutes to 8.